Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life. That really covers everything, doesn't it? Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true, people. It really is. You're learning so much when you sit down to write. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. We got a new issue will be up soon, probably within the week, and it'll include my conversation with suspense writer and teacher extraordinaire Stephen James. He's the author of the book. Well, he's tons of suspense books, but he wrote the book Plot Over Trump Structure, I think is the name of it. Stories Trump Structure. That's what it is. Story Trump Structure. And structure. And we had a great conversation about story and what it is and what it isn't. And that'll be up very soon on authormagazine.org. And, of course, we're funded by the Great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. Check out the PNWA at pnwa.org. I'll be teaching a class there, a couple classes for them. One, a fearless writing class. Let me double check when I'll be teaching Fearless Writing. It'll be a one-day workshop in October. It'll be October 8th, and then starting the 22nd of October, I'll be teaching a five-week memoir class. I will also be at Write on the Sound on September 30th, the day of September 30th, teaching a Fearless Writing workshop, all-day workshop, or four-hour workshop for you Fearless Writers. So check out pnwa.org if you want to sign up for one of the classes or some of the other workshops they're teaching for the fall, or if you want to go take the Fearless Writing Masterclass with me at the Write on the Sound in Edmond, Washington, go to Write on the Sound on the internet. They've got it all there. Okay. Speaking of conferences, today's guest, Melinda Ruckers Haynes. I met her in part because of writers' conferences. She was at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association's Writers' Conference this past summer, and I got to meet her. I was very glad to, but I only briefly, so we're going to have her on the show. And Melinda, she's an interesting woman. She's an award-winning novelist. She's published six novels, and, they're in the subgenre of paranormal, young adult, contemporary. They're romance-ish novels. I'll let her define them if she wants to. But one of the reasons I'm interested in Melinda is that her interests are so varied beyond just fiction writing. She also has a background in education. She does coaching she has a coaching practice that emphasizes block removal and the sort of flow generated for creativity. She's a background in neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP, if you're familiar with that. Very interesting woman, and I'm just thrilled to have her on the show today to talk about, among other things, her upcoming book, Contest Smarts, Writing Contest, Writing Strategies. So let's get her on here. Melinda, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bill. Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, it's glad to have you here. I kind of bumbled around what you write in terms of fiction. It's in the romance broad, that the broadening genre of romance. It's young adult, paranormal, contemporary. Is that, within all those, is that right?
Oh, it is. Bill, the thing about that is, once I escaped academe and I got to Seattle, I fell in with a group of romance writers. And so they completely changed my life. And started out in the business as a romance writer.
They changed your life.
It did change my life, yes, because I...
How did
that
happen?
Well...
Now, wait, can I ask you what... Wait, before you tell me, were you reading a lot of romance at that point?
Oh, good Lord, no.
Oh, because you were an academic.
No.
I
was.
Do that.
Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't allowed.
not really. It wasn't something we discussed. I may have read the odd bestseller or something like that,
right.
But, I didn't share what my private reading was about, by golly.
Right.
You
right.
Know?
Gotcha.
So when I fell in with a group of romance writers, as I say, some of whom may be familiar to you, like Debbie McCumber and Elizabeth Boyle and Stella Cameron and Darcy Carson and Pam
Binder.
Oh,
I know all these people.
Yes.
Oh, Wonderful
Indeed.
People.
Indeed. Yeah. In fact, it was Elizabeth Boyle that came up to me at a Romance Writers of America meeting there in Seattle and said, hey, you want to join a critique group? And I said, yeah, okay. I had no idea what that was, but it sounded like
really?
A plan. No.
You didn't even know what a critique group was.
No. I had been doing professional writing and developing curriculum and teacher training programs and that sort of thing. And so a critique group for fiction, hadn't a clue. No.
Wow.
And I really hadn't
okay.
a clue about fiction, except I always like to say that I learned to write fiction as a grant writer.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes,
thank you for
yes,
a glimpse into the world of grants.
Yes, indeed.
Wow. Okay, so hold on. So you're at the romance. So you're at a Romance Writers of America, or romance, because the RWA is huge and has chapters all over the country and a very vibrant one here in the Northwest.
It was a Seattle chapter. It was their annual conference, and I saw it advertised in the paper, and I thought, well, they say they're going to have fiction writing workshops. I'm going to drop in there and see what that's about.
And so you had never written fiction? You had never written a drop of fiction?
No.
Seriously?
No, seriously.
Oh, wow.
No. I decided that it was time to do something else. And fiction sounded fun to me. And after all, every grant that I ever wrote was funded. So I figured, how hard can it be? I'm going to make money at this. This is going to be great.
Wow. Well, Well, naive you were. However, if you're going to fall into any genre with the hopes of making money, you could do worse than starting with romance, I have to say.
That's for sure. And you know, they had quite a Romance Writers of America especially has quite a training program for their unpublished writers. It's and their contests. It is a huge machine, and it produces results, award-winning results.
Yeah.
And people make lots of money.
Yeah,
so,
they really are. I don't quite. They are a unique operation in that way, and I don't know if it is. I wonder if it is to some degree. You know, Do you know who the author? I'm forgetting his name now because he's a science fiction writer, huge deal. He's the one who invented the term cyberspace, and his name. Oh, God, there's million geeks out there now who are hating me for forgetting his name.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I didn't know who he was until I interviewed him, and I told one of my friends who's a huge science fiction writer, and he almost hit the floor, and I was like, I don't know who this guy is. Anyway, I can't remember his name now. William Gibson. Okay. Yeah, he created cyberpunk. He created the whole cyberpunk movement. He was a big deal. Anyway, and so this is a long way around coming back to what I'd like to talk to you about, which is he and I talked about genre because he was really in a battle with genre because he was technically a genre writer, but he didn't like the idea of being a genre writer, but he had won every science fiction award known to man, and so he was a science fiction writer. And he said the thing that genre writers are always contending with is that the audience to some degree wants the same thrill again and again, that your job is to provide the same thrill over and over again. And he was always kind of contending with that. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it is. It's the audience and your agent and your editor. That's what they want. Let's do it the same, but different. Like that other book, but a little different. But we want it the same.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We want the same, but make it original.
Yes, please. Oh, I know. That was somewhat troubling for me.
But you had to learn. But
the originality part, that's great. But the happy thing about romance writing is there are so many subgenres. And how I got into the young adult and then into the paranormal especially. So,
you know why there's so many subgenres?
Yeah, that's good fun.
You know why there's so many subgenres? It just occurred to me, Melinda. Because love is the organizing principle of the universe. It is the guiding force.
Deep. I love it.
It is, actually. It is, but I believe it's true. I was going to write, I still might write the memoir about my wife and me, and it is based on the thing I learned from my pursuit of my wife is that love is the organizing principle of life. And so you can write in any genre you want. Love is there, whether you call it romance or not. But love is everywhere.
That's true.
All the time.
And actually, in the romance genre or world, they say it a relationship. You know, it's a,
yes.
it's a relationship. But I think
yes.
all character-driven novels, there's got to be a relationship with something, you know, even
Thank
if it's
you.
Just with themselves. So, yes,
Thank
indeed.
You.
And I like raising it in vibration to the love realm. I really do.
You're using an interesting word. You're using
mm-hmm.
an interesting word you just used there, which is a word I'm very familiar with, the word
vibration.
Yes,
indeed.
There are some people like me who like to use that word.
Yes.
For all that it suggests about the world, the physical and the metaphysical.
Uh-huh.
And I do love vibration.
Agree.
There's a teacher who I adore who used that word specifically, and I quite like her. You might be familiar with her. I don't want to get too... her name is Esther Hicks. Are you familiar with Esther
Absolutely.
Hicks?
Absolutely. I
yeah.
absolutely am, yes.
Oh.
Yes,
I've been to
their workshops and
yeah.
Listened when they were doing their live workshops online. And
yeah.
it's, you bet. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so, all right, well, to our listeners.
In fact, the first time I saw them is when they came to Seattle. And it was held out in Woodinville, I think, or...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, someplace
I just saw them.
Yeah.
I just saw them this summer when they were here. Awesome.
Yeah.
I should just tell, I will briefly tell our listeners, Melinda and I, now that we know this, could sit here and talk probably for the next hour about vibration. We won't do
we
it.
We certainly could.
We could. But if you're interested, we're talking about something called Abraham Hicks. It's awesome. It's all over the internet. They're very good. If you're into things like The Secret and Law of Attraction, they are really the ones who started it. And the woman's name is Esther Hicks. And they're awesome, but that's perhaps a subject for another show. I would love to get, however, to your book. Your next book, the next book coming out, Contest Smarts. Contest
That's
Smarts.
Right.
Now, you're an award-winning author, and you feel
yes.
you can help other writers use the myriad of contests out there for writers to their benefit. Is that true?
I think so. I do. Yes, I know I have. I came up I was introduced to the idea of literary or writing contests through, again, RWA, because they have a huge
mm-hmm.
contest for their unpublished and their published writers. It's just a huge deal. And
yeah.
I learned how to work that, and I won 16 awards in about the last 20-odd years, and people are always saying to me, how do you do that? And I said,
right.
well, let me tell you. So this summer at PNWA, I did a workshop on it. So
how'd that go?
It was SRO, I'll tell you. I was stunned.
Really?
I didn't.
Wow.
Yeah, and everybody
That's awesome.
Was... It was full of the black ribbon wearers, you know,
yeah,
the people
yeah.
who had already finaled, and
yeah.
So it was a great workshop, lots of good questions and lots of good feedback, which of course has gone into the book.
And so let me
is.
Ask you this: do you feel then that someone could be a connected writer? They're writing the stuff they love to write, and they're dedicated to learning how to write it as well as they can. But there
mm-hmm.
is – so they have that piece in place. Like I don't like to use the word good writer. That even gives me the heebie-jeebies. But they're someone who loves to write and is writing what they're meant to write, for instance. So they've got that
mm-hmm.
that craft and passion piece in place. But even for that person, there's things they need to know about the world of contest to help them thrive in that realm. Is that what you're suggesting to me?
I absolutely believe that.
Okay, so
yes.
for instance, what?
I equate it to when I first went to my first editor's office, and I saw stacks of manuscripts sitting around that office, so almost up to his
yeah.
desk.
And it was,
not really. I was feeling very fortunate that I had sold into that house and to see
right.
all of those other things sitting there. And so I asked about the process. Now, I'd sort of known how it went. And he
right.
said he looks at the title. Then he looks at the first line, if he gets to the end of the paragraph, to the next paragraph,
yeah.
and turns the page, and that's about what you hit in any
yeah.
place where you submit
yeah.
your book. And
no,
I say, if you're going into a contest, you can get many good things from contests, A person needs to know that. But if you're going in, you've got to think about that, oh, that front end of that, because that's usually what you're entering, is the front part of your book. And that has got to shine. You have to grab that reader around the throat and drag him into the story. You know that old saying. It's true.
Yeah.
And, oh, my gosh, you just cannot afford to waste any words, because it's always limited in the page count of what you can submit. So
yeah,
you almost have to tell a little mini story there. You know, shine that up until it will reflect the world back to you. It's an amazing thing. But there are certain things that you must do if you want to if you want to make a contest work for you.
You know, it's absolutely true. I'm a judge of contests now through the PNWA, and through author. I'm also an editor. And a lot of times I know in the first paragraph, I can tell if it's even in the vicinity of something I want to publish within the first paragraph. And sometimes, but I'll tell you, I'll let our readers or listeners know, it might be helpful, because I don't know if you've ever been on the other end of it, of being a editor. Sometimes I'll read an opening paragraph, and it won't be a great necessarily opening paragraph, but I can tell the author is trying to do what I really am looking for, and that they're, even if it's not perfect, I can work with them. And then there are some people I can see right away that they're heading in a totally different direction than I'm interested in. Does that make sense?
I can tell very fast. As an acquiring editor or whatever, I agree. Yes, but as a contest judge, you have to stick with it. You have to stick with it. Yeah, okay.
There's no
I don't
work.
Like this subject. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no rewriting, yeah.
No. You have to stick with it and hopefully get to the end of the story and give it a fair read. That's most important.
You do. No, you do. Oh, yeah. When I'm judging, I read it all the way through. Although sometimes I can tell, boy, this person just wasn't ready to submit this. You know, finished.
Yeah, we've all been there. Oh, yeah.
But here's something interesting to ask, Melinda. Have you been a contest judge?
Yes.
Okay. So I find this to be true. So I judge in the genre that I write in, which is memoir and short memoir. That's what I teach. That's what I write now. That's sort of what I do. And so that's what I judge in. And I have to say, I find the people's entries that are really not working some of the most instructive, some of the most helpful to me to see why it isn't working. It actually teaches me a lot about the genre, oddly.
Uh-huh.
Do you find that to be the case at all?
I do.
Yeah?
I do. Yes. In fact, I have judged in the sci-fi paranormal of the PNWA, and I was the category chair for that.
Oh, God bless you.
And then judged as well. And yes, I always find it instructive. I do. Okay. I know you can see when someone is really trying to make it come together. There isn't sort of an organic feel to it, and they're struggling. You can feel that. The idea may be sound, and they may be trying to get it across. But bless their hearts. Well, bless your heart. Yeah.
Right. If it's not crackling, there's a kind of, if it feels either alive or it feels sort of manufactured, I think.
Yes, I agree.
You know what I mean?
And how interesting, Bill, in memoir that here people are telling the story of their lives and they forget to add the drama to it. Sometimes it just becomes sort of a recitation of history and whatever. I don't need to know about Aunt Myrtle's cookies unless I sold them and, you know, did whatever and it changed my life. But
I always say,
where's your sense of drama? Let's put that in there, because everyone's life is dramatic, even though it may seem mundane. Come on.
Here's something
in
interesting. I love to teach and lecture. I don't like the word lecture, but then I'll give a talk, you know. And I feel like my job, I have three layers to what I'm trying to do when I give a talk, is my first job is entertain. My second job is inspire. My third job is to teach. But I first must entertain my listeners. They have to be engaged on an entertainment level. And then I hope to inspire them so they can just at least go away feeling like, yes, I love life and I can do what I want. And then the third thing, maybe give them a few actual tools. But my first job, Melinda, is to entertain so that they are happy in their seats. You know what I mean?
That's what I do. Absolutely. Yeah. You have to do it. And besides, if you don't, then it's no fun for anybody.
No.
I wouldn't have fun standing up there. I've just had that ever since I started teaching. I think my first teaching job was teaching junior high.
I learned
then to stay on my feet because you never knew when the little beggars were going to get you. So it's the old moving target thing, you know. And the thing is that I was always having a good time, and they, for the most part, were too. But it's certainly instructive, but I agree, you have it exactly right. It's the entertainment. You know, it's the old dog and pony show. It's my best. Here, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's roll.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a lot you can give within entertainment. You can move people. You can reveal all kinds of beautiful things about life. But the entertainment, that's a broad term, keeps the audience who've surrendered their attention to us. You know, they've given us their attention. I feel like I owe them something back, you know, for that attention.
Uh-huh. Right.
And entertainment. Yeah. Let them engage. And it goes to the page, too, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Of course,
and I also like teaching by example or by funny story or horrible story or something like that. But I always let's raise it. You know, let's raise the vibe in the room. Come on, let's rock with this. That's
you know,
what
and
I
so
want.
This is interesting, Melinda. So Melinda and I, as I mentioned, we like this teacher Abraham Hicks, and she talks about vibration. And really, one way to think of that is. The feeling that you have in you. Do you feel hopeful? Do you feel hopeless? Do you feel curious?
Yes.
Do you feel bored? And each
yes.
sort of feeling has its own sort of vibrational set point, like almost like a tuner on a radio in a way. And as a writer, you want to raise the feeling in the room to the highest place it can be so that everybody's kind of humming along at their best.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Don't you think? I mean, you're trying to create a feeling in a room.
Yes. Yes, and as they always said in hypnosis, is that if you're leading someone into trance, you have to go there first. You know, you can't just send someone in. You have to go along with. You know, no one. Yeah, so it's in that vibration thing, Bill. You're feeling it. You're feeling the client and seeing how they're going. That's right. And you kind of go there first. And you set up sort of an intuitive – it's amazing. Sometimes I used to – my clientele or my business, I used to keep it strictly working with writers and work on block removal and all that. But what we would also do was explore past life regression or work through different stories. Some people have stories that stick with them and they want to know why. You know, some dreams or something that comes up, and you can go to the origin of those and have a look around. And sometimes you can almost feel, if you're in rapport with your client, with your subject, you can feel what they're feeling and almost see it before they do. It's an amazing thing. And I like to think, maybe I can establish this with my reader. You know,
yes.
I'd love to pull my reader into the story like this.
You know, it's so interesting that you say that, Melinda, because I work with clients too, and I teach a class. The Fearless Writing class I teach is really just I pose a question to I base it on the Abraham Hicks conference workshops where the writers ask me questions. I try to answer them, but it has to be very intuitive. And what you just described about how you're getting in sort of alignment with your clients so you can really feel what they're feeling, intuit what they're thinking. You know what it reminds me of is when you're writing, how receptive you have to be, how you have to feel like you kind of get out of the way and allow, in your case, the characters to talk to you. You have to clear some sort of intellectual concept of life away to allow the stories in. I feel like I'm doing the same thing when I'm tuning in to my clients, the people in workshops, to talk to them about what's troubling them. It feels like the same place I'm going to.
I think so. That's reasonable to me. I'll have to attend one of your workshops.
I think
that sounds interesting.
You. Yeah, well, if you should ever be in the Northwest, I hope I have a book coming out in April called Fearless Writing, and I hope to do a lot of workshops once it comes out. So if I'm ever in Tucson, I'll let you know.
Absolutely. We can put together a workshop for you. That'd be great. The first thing I got when I got here, I connected with writers. So I just
you
do
did.
That.
Well, wherever I think there's a pretty good writing community down there, isn't there?
Yes, they do. We have the university. We have, and then we have, we have retired people from all over the United States and all over the world, and they all have stories to tell.
Yes, they do.
Yes,
they do. God bless the retired people of the world. They are, most of whom I deal with, especially because I do memoir. I do so much memoir teaching.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I love.
Well, I go to a particular group here. And it meets at the library, and it's she calls it a writer's motivational workshop. Alexis Powers.
Yeah.
And it's really like a table read. There's no criticism allowed.
Right.
Everybody comes in and they can read anything they wish, and often with that particular age group, memoir. Ah, and there's some stunning stuff that comes out of there. Oh, it just knocks you back. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Amazing science fiction and paranormal in my wheelhouse kind of thing. And I'm just always knocked out about that. Yeah. It's
That's
amazing.
Awesome.
Some of the amazing writing that I hear. Mechanically, sometimes it's a little clunky, but wow.
Yeah.
They're getting the story across. It is
That's
great.
Awesome. So you're inspired. You let yourself be inspired by other people's successes, even small ones.
I think it's got to happen because that's how you stay in the game. That's how you keep it fresh, keep out there. I want to inspire others, and I want that back. You know, I just get inspired by being around others and looking for that idea, for that expression. Ooh, yeah.
Feels good,
doesn't it? It
does. Feels good to be inspired, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does. That's why I love – I feel like I have the best job in the world. My job ultimately is to inspire people, but the only way I can inspire people, quote unquote, is to be inspired. So that I have to get inspired to inspire people. It's just a win-win situation.
You can't help anyone else get there if you haven't been there.
Amen. That is so true. Well, Melinda, you see, you and I could have talked for hours, I think, and perhaps someday – we will have that opportunity. But unfortunately, for this show, I have to wrap it up. But I'm not ready to do so just yet. I want to ask you one more question. Are you ready?
All right. I am.
Okay. Before I ask you the question, tell me the name of the book again one more time. It's Contest Smarts?
Contest Smarts. And the website is up. It's contestsmarts.com.
And they can get it there or Amazon or...
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Contest Smarts. Melinda Rucker Haynes. Remember, the Rucker. Melinda Rucker Haynes. Because there's another Melinda Haynes out there. That's not the one you want. You want Melinda Rucker Haynes.
Well, you may want her, but
she's fine. But you want this if you want this book, it's gotta be Melinda Rucker Haynes. Okay. So Contest Smarts. Everybody write that down. Get the book if you're ever gonna enter a contest. But Melinda, I have one more question for you. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to finish this sentence. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what? What has it taught you?
Oh, secrets. The sky's the limit. It really is. My husband always said, please put a good ending on that story, on that book. He said, because whatever you write seems to come true.
Oh.
Yeah. Think of that.
That is awesome. Yeah, don't kill the heroine. Not yet.
No.
Not yet. The sky's the limit. You know, it really, it's a cliche, and yet, you know what? It's true. It is true.
You get to make it up, Bill. You get to make it up. It's
you do.
Great.
What
kind of freedom is that? It is delicious. That's really exciting for me.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you for that. That is a wonderful lesson. And Melinda, it was a pleasure to chat with you. And best of luck with the book and all the wonderful work you do.
Well, thank you. And to you as well, Bill. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Melinda.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, you see that, everybody? The sky's the limit. It's true. It's true. I know you've heard it before, but it's true. You get to make it all up, just like Melinda said. She's absolutely spot on. Don't you put the limit on. You go find out if there's a limit, which there isn't. But don't assume it's there. Don't put it on yourself. Just you do what you love and then let life see where it needs to go. Oprah Winfrey said that, actually. She said, life has a bigger dream for you than you have dreamed. And she, of all people, should know. Well, I'll be back next week with another interview, this time with the fascinating publicist, Dan Blank. He's not your average publicist. So we're going to talk about publicity and marketing from a different angle. I think you guys are going to love it. Until then, thanks to my good pal, Jeff, and to all my listeners. Go do something you love. You can't get it wrong if you do.